It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, you could soon be seeing some special labels at the store they say made in Wisconsin. We'll get the details on this new effort to promote state products.
But first, four states held their presidential primaries and caucuses yesterday: Mississippi, Hawaii, Idaho, and Michigan.
And there were some surprising victories and defeats as the polling numbers came in throughout the night. Clinton was projected to win Michigan and came up short. The win went to Bernie Sanders. And Trump is still in the game despite an aggressive ad campaign against him. He ended up winning three states.
Joining us now to talk about yesterday's results is Harry Enten. He's the senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time. Harry, welcome back.
Hello.
Well, how about Michigan? What'd you make of that?
Oh, boy. As you could tell, I was waiting to get the words out of my mouth. I couldn't even wait. We looked at the numbers, and this was the biggest primary error for polling since at least 84. And to be honest, based upon some new data that someone was kind enough to send me, I think that this primary polling error was even greater than the one I thought it might be equivalent to. So in well-polled contest, and this was a well-polled contest, the Michigan Democratic primary, Bernie Sanders, who was down by 21 points or so, and the average of polls ends up winning by two. It's the greatest error ever in presidential primary history.
Well, everybody's trying to figure out what it means. Here's a listen to what Bernie Sanders thought it meant. So he was talking in Florida while the votes were being counted there in Michigan.
What tonight means is that the Bernie Sanders campaign, the people's revolution that we are talking about, the political revolution that we are talking about, is strong in every part of the country. And frankly, we believe that our strongest areas are yet to happen.
Now, Sanders, Harry, lost in Mississippi, as everyone expected. But you wrote in your piece on looking at Michigan, Mississippi, and the road ahead, those southern states that Hillary Clinton had a big advantage in are pretty much done now. So Sanders is maybe right to say his strongest areas are yet to come.
Well, I would say Clinton's strongest areas are behind her, but that isn't necessarily saying the same thing as Sanders' strongest areas are to come. There are a number of states where Hillary Clinton should do well in that haven't voted in yet, mainly North Carolina and Florida, for instance, vote next Tuesday, where have a high African-American population. Florida has a very old population as well. Clinton does well among older voters. So I think, you know, look, Bernie Sanders deserves a lot of credit. His fans should certainly take a lot of heart in what happened last night, but he is still more than 200 pledged delegates behind Hillary Clinton. He has missed what we're calling his delegate targets. That is how well we expect him to do if the race was tied nationally. He is still well below his targets there. So, no, I mean, yeah, he could come back and sort of make this more of a contest. But remember, Hillary Clinton has a larger lead in the pledged delegate count than Barack Obama ever had during the 2008 campaign.
Let's look at a state like Ohio, where the polls, like Michigan, show Clinton pretty far ahead. Is it possible that there was something throwing off the polls in Michigan that might be true in another big Midwestern state?
Sure. I mean, I think Ohio is the most obvious example. I mean, you know, Ohio is just to the southeast of Michigan. It's an open primary like Michigan. It has a major metropolitan area, Cleveland versus Detroit. And the other thing that's going on in Ohio, like in Michigan, was that there were a number of people, anecdotal reports, who said, you know what, we think Hillary Clinton's going to win, so we're going to vote in the Republican primary, perhaps vote for John Kasich. And in Ohio, don't be surprised if a lot of Democrats do that, given that John Kasich is, of course, their governor.
So you mentioned that delegate count, and people are looking at Michigan saying big win for Sanders here, unexpected, outperformed polls. You mentioned that delegate lead, though. When all the dust settled, Clinton's lead after yesterday is bigger than it was before yesterday.
That's exactly right, because if you look at Mississippi, which no one is talking about Mississippi, I don't know why people aren't talking about Mississippi. Mississippi is a fine state, maybe a little shady of a history, but a fine state. And Clinton absolutely romped there. She got greater than 80% of the vote. She picked up well more than half the delegates. And because she did so well there, her delegate lead expanded. And that's the thing in Democratic primaries. It's not just about winning and losing. It's about how much you win by. Everything is proportional. A two-point win in Michigan is perfectly fine for Bernie Sanders. But if he can't hold Clinton's margins down in the states that she's winning in, all of this will be for naught.
So what was up with those polls? I imagine you and pollsters and the people who look at polls are going to be trying to figure out why the outcome was so different than the polls were saying in Michigan.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is going to be something, if you remember back in 2008 on the Democratic side in New Hampshire, there was a big polling error where all the polls said Obama and Clinton won. There was a blue ribbon commission that was taken up after that primary result. Don't be surprised if we see something similar here. But, you know, as the dust settles and we try and figure out what's going on, my guess, based upon looking at what we've looked at so far, is it's a confluence of events. It's an open primary. Maybe there were more young voters who voted in the Democratic primary than we were expecting. Maybe African Americans weren't as favorable towards Hillary Clinton, although they still were quite favorable as we were expecting. So it's a lot of things. Usually the answer isn't just one thing. And for all we really know, maybe there was one late surge of momentum for Sanders, but that's probably just part of the equation.
Before we move on to the Republican side, let's get into those superdelegates a bit. One of Sanders' main advisors was on NPR's On Point this morning saying these delegates, even though they've pledged, doesn't mean they have to stick with their pledge. If Sanders can demonstrate support, if he can keep racking up victories, they can, they think, persuade some of those to change from the Clinton to the Sanders camp. Do you see that as key to a Sanders strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that that is the least of his problems. If Bernie Sanders wins the highest number of pledged delegates, and it's clear that he has, those superdelegates are not going to stop him from getting the nomination. The only real case where those superdelegates may play some sort of role is if both fall short of the number of pledged number of delegates they need to win the nomination. But if Sanders is ahead, it's difficult to imagine that the superdelegates are going to say, you know what, no, we're going to take that away from him. It would lead to basically a riot at the convention.
Talking to Harry Enten from 538.com, looking at yesterday's results in primaries and caucuses. Let's go to the Republican side now, Harry. Trump picks up three. Cruz picked up a state. Marco Rubio.
Oh, boy.
The talk has been, okay, he'll stick it out, because why wouldn't he? He'll stick it out till Florida, his home state, his last shot there. There's rumblings now. People are saying, nope, don't even wait for that, Rubio. Supposedly some people inside his campaign are starting to think that. Does Rubio stick around for, what is it, just like a week away till Florida?
Look. Until he drops out, my inclination is always to think that these guys are going to stick in, especially because it's Rubio's home state. I'm not sure I believe some of the polls coming from that state showing Rubio well back, but there's no question he's trailing there. It's 99 delegates, and it's winner-take-all. If Rubio doesn't win there, it's going to be Trump, and that's a real question whether the other candidates would really benefit from Rubio leaving, but remember, there are other states that are voting on the 15th, including Illinois, including Missouri, including Ohio. If Rubio drops out, he makes it a much higher chance that somebody else could win in those states other than Donald Trump. So it's kind of a balancing act if you're against Trump. Do I want to try and stop him in Florida? But if I don't really have a good chance there, maybe I should cut my losses and drop out so I give the anti-Trumps a better shot in those other states.
But the establishment of the Republican Party, their only guy in that case is Kasich, I guess, or they settle on Ted Cruz, which from the outset, it didn't look like the mainstream Republican establishment wanted to do.
This is the most amazing part of this primary, in all honesty, is the embracing of Ted Cruz by someone by the name of Lindsey Graham, who had cracked jokes about Ted Cruz dying, and all of a sudden he says, nah, actually, I could be okay with him. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what exactly happens after 3:15, whether there is a sort of crowding of sources to Ted Cruz. If Kasich loses Ohio, he's out, so it doesn't even matter. But if he wins Ohio, then we get into some tricky math of where the different anti-Trumps play well, and Trump may be able to simply win over a divided field.
As we said, Donald Trump won three of the four states available, and he started a campaign speech with a little math. Let's give a listen.
We started off with 17. We're down to four. Of the four, they're pretty much all gone, okay? Pretty much. They didn't do so well tonight, folks, okay? I'm not going to say anybody didn't do well. They didn't do well. There's only one person did well tonight, Donald Trump, I will tell you. It's true.
Harry, you talked about before Super Tuesday, Trump got about 34% of primary votes cast. After Super Tuesday, 34%. There's been a big concentrated fire at debates, ads run against Trump. I don't know if you've broken down the numbers yet. Is he still getting that 34%-ish zone?
He did a little better than that last night, mostly on the strength of how he did in Mississippi. But again, he's not getting a majority of the vote. He is getting a plurality of the vote. He's not getting a majority of the delegates. He got a plurality of the delegates last night. There are still a lot of signs that a lot of Republicans are very queasy about voting for Donald Trump. So we're going to have to wait and see what exactly happens when this field thins down. But again, I would look to 315. Let's see how the delegate dust settles in Missouri, in Illinois, in Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, and see where Trump is after that. Even if he wins Florida and Ohio, it's still not an easy road for him. So it's far from over, though. Good night for Donald Trump last night.
It was. You've been tracking his unfavorables, though. So there's clearly people who like him enough to keep him in the lead, keep him winning states. But those unfavorables here in Wisconsin, a recent poll found his net favorability rating at zero among Republican identified voters, worse among everybody. Is that something that could stop him in the primary or a big millstone around his neck in a general election?
Absolutely. I'll say two things. In terms of the general election, the ABC News Washington Post poll found that his net favorable rating was lower than any other political candidate in their entire history in their most recent poll. We're back to the beginning where his net favorable rating is awful, at least among the general public. In terms of the primary electorate, look at both the ABC Washington Post poll and the NBC Wall Street Journal poll. Ted Cruz beats Donald Trump in a one-on-one. Now, whether or not that actually bears out when it becomes that, if it does, I cannot say. But it is still a uphill climb for him, at least to be able to get a majority of delegates going into the national convention.
And that brings up the question of how this Republican primary comes out. Is it going to be one-on-one Cruz, say, against Trump? Or is it going to be the Romney strategy, if you want to call it that? Hey, everybody, stay in. Hey, all the voters, vote for anybody but Trump. Make sure he doesn't get a majority. We'll sort this all out at the convention.
It will depend partially on how Marco Rubio and John Kasich do next Tuesday. If Kasich loses, he loses Ohio. He has already said he's going to depart this race. That idea of trying to keep the ball away from Trump really only works in proportional primaries, which if it were the Democratic side, they would all be. But on the Republican side, we saw, for instance, in Idaho last night where Ted Cruz would have gotten a majority of the vote if Marco Rubio had not been in the race, but he instead fell short, only got a plurality, and therefore had to split the delegates with Trump. If he had gotten a majority, Cruz would have won all the delegates, and there are going to be a lot more states like that which have 50% rules to get winner-take-all. There are going to be more winner-take-all states going on forward, and a divided field against Trump does the Republican anti-Trump movement no good.
You do a lot of math there at 538, but you just don't have a lot of precedent to work with still on this one, do you?
Let's be honest. I just looked up in the database of multi-billionaires, or that's what he claims to be anyway, running for president, making remarks that offend some people. Turns out there really aren't many of those who have done so well in Republican primaries in history. So, yes, we're in uncharted territories here.
Well, looking ahead to Ohio and Florida, we've touched on them both a little bit. What are you going to watch for between now and then? What are you going to look for as the exit polls start coming out?
Well, I think the thing that we're going to look for is whether or not John Kasich is able to coalesce that anti-Trump vote in the state of Ohio, whether Marco Rubio has any good movement in Florida. And I'm hoping for a Missouri poll. If there are any pollsters listening, I beg of thee to please release a Missouri poll so we have some idea of what's going on in that state. It is, at the end of the day, mostly winner-take-all based upon the rules. And then in terms of the exit polls, late deciders, whether or not the anti-Trump vote is able to coalesce around one candidate. Yesterday in Michigan, which was a state where Donald Trump only got a little more than a third of the vote, the late deciders split pretty evenly between Ted Cruz and John Kasich, which basically ensured that Trump was going to win.
We'll leave it there, Harry. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every Wednesday to give us the latest updates on what's going on in Washington and on the campaign trail.